Welcome to our podcast for college Catholics, where we discuss faith and spirituality from a Catholic perspective. I'm your host, Father Patrick Wainwright, and today we will welcome again Father Michael Ward. Father Michael Ward is an Englishman, a Catholic priest, and a literary critic and theologian with a special expertise in the writings of C.S. Lewis. He works at the University of Oxford, where he is an associate member of the Faculty of Theology and Religion. He is the author of the award-winning and best-selling book, Planet Narnia, The Seven Heavens in the Imagination of C.S. Lewis, and After Humanity, A Guide to C.S. Lewis, The Abolition of Man. Thank you, Father Ward, for joining us again. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Father Patrick. Great to be with you.
Yes, and this, I know that you are an expert in C.S. Lewis, and I know that this podcast is heard by many people, many college students who have heard maybe about C.S. Lewis, but have never read perhaps his books or maybe seen the movies or watched the movies. So I was wondering if you could give us some advice as to why it would be relevant for college students or for young people in general to read and learn from the philosophical and religious principles set forth by Lewis in his books.
Yes, I mean, C.S. Lewis wrote an enormous body of work, and basically in three main categories, all of which are interesting and important in their own way. The best known is his fiction. The Narnia Chronicles, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe is his best known book, but also The Screwtape Letters and The Great Divorce and many others. That's one category. The second is his works of Christian apologetics, non-fiction works explaining the faith, such as Mere Christianity, The Problem of Pain, his book on miracles, his book on prayer, and so forth. And then thirdly, he was an academic. He himself had a career in scholarship at University of Oxford and then Cambridge. He was a great medieval literary critic and literary historian, and he wrote a lot of books in that area too. Though that, of course, is much more for the specialist.
So he's a lot of writings that we don't even hear of.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
But they're all very readable. He was an exceptionally gifted stylist. He never wrote a dull or unclear sentence in his life. So once you get into Lewis, it's very difficult to stop. But you ask about what Catholic students might in particular want to get into. And two titles come immediately to mind. One is The Four Loves, which is his book about the four Greek words for love.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which are storge, for affectionate love, philia, for friendship, eros, for romantic and sexual love, and agape, which is charity and divine love. And he has a very insightful, thoughtful, wise exploration of these four different words and the four different kinds of love involved, and their various distortions and the way they can go bad. And I mention it because, first of all, because it's just a fine book, well worth reading, but also because John Paul II, Pope John, St. John Paul II, had a great admiration for the Four Loves. That's one thing. And the other book is The Abolition of Man. You mentioned I've written a guide to the Abolition of Man. It's Lewis's most philosophical work. It's short and slim, but quite dense, quite difficult in some ways. It's philosophical, not theological. And I mention that because another pope, Benedict XVI, greatly admired the Abolition of Man and gave a lecture largely about it when he visited Cambridge in England one time. So if we take our lead from John Paul II and Benedict XVI, those are the two works that Lewis, I think, is particularly worth reading for, but by Catholics, I mean. But, I mean, all of his output in various ways has value.
Now, you mentioned The Four Loves and explained briefly what it is about, which was great description about it. What is The Abolition of Man about? Because it sounds like a strong title.
It is. It's a short work, as I say, three philosophical lectures that Lewis gave during the Second World War on the question of whether value is objective or not. Goodness, truth, beauty, are these things realities in the world that we recognize and must conform ourselves to? Or are they just kind of subjective projections from our own will? That's the question he's attempting to answer, and he's answering it very resolutely on the side of objective value being a real thing. And unless we accept its reality and conform ourselves to it, we will sooner or later abolish our own humanity. That's why he calls the book The Abolition of Man, because we'll be undercutting an essential element of our own anthropological identity.
Right, and that leads to dictatorship as well, right?
Well, yeah, it leads to all sorts of things. A dictatorship at every level.
Right.
Just in our own lives, as individuals, we can start, as it were, throwing our weight about, just insisting on our way, it's our way or the highway, because we are the creators of value. So you see how it destroys individual lives and family lives.
Absolutely.
But also at the political level, it destroys whole countries. If a dictator gets into power, and has no respect for the rule of law.
Right. So whenever it's a relativism that leads to dictatorship, so to speak, like what Benedict had said.
Exactly, yeah.
Dictatorship of relativism.
Yes. This is one of the reasons why Benedict so admired the book, that he saw Lewis very prophetically talking about the dictatorship of relativism or subjectivism. It's a sort of Nietzschean will to power.
Absolutely.
The only criterion of value is what I want.
Right.
And that is a short road to hell.
Right. And also the destruction of God, the willingness to destroy God as the origin of that objective truth, objective value.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. And so it's a very difficult book, The Abolition of Man. And that's why I've written this guide to it, to help people gain access to some of its complexities. It's a brilliant book and really admired across the spectrum, both within the church and without. In England at the moment, we have a very prominent atheist philosopher called John Gray, and he's spoken very warmly and admiringly about The Abolition of Man, because although he's an atheist, he does actually believe in objective value.
Wow.
He's the best kind of atheist.
Right.
And he saw how prescient The Abolition of Man was and how it's just as relevant today as it was in the 1940s, if not more so, he says. So a book that can get the approval of an atheist like John Gray and Pope Benedict XVI must be doing something interesting.
Absolutely. That's great. Very good. Well, and any of the fiction books that you would recommend, which one would you recommend to read?
Well, if you haven't read a single word by Lewis, probably the best way is through the Narnia Chronicles. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is the place to start. If you've already become acquainted with the Narnia books, but haven't yet read anything else, I would suggest trying the Screwtape Letters.
It's also very enjoyable. It's very funny.
It's a brilliant work of satirical wit. Screwtape Letters is a fictional correspondence between two demons, between Screwtape, the senior demon, and his nephew Wormwood. And the letters are all about the psychology of temptation.
Right. That's awesome. Very good. Well, thank you very much. I'll put a link to these texts that you say, especially the ones that you wrote, on the show notes of this podcast. So that said, in what ways would you say that the writings, because C.S. Lewis, I understand, was not Catholic.
Correct.
But many of the principles that he used, or he described and addressed, lead, so to speak, to some extent, to the Catholic Church, I think. So in what ways would you say that the writings of C.S. Lewis lead the reader to the Catholic Church, if they do?
Well, in many cases, they do lead the reader to the Catholic Church. I'm a prime example.
Right.
I was raised as an Anglican, a very, very low church Anglican, but gradually, largely through reading Lewis, but also by being led from Lewis to writers like Tolkien and Chesterton, Catholic writers, I was exposed more and more to Catholic theology. But if we just confine ourselves to Lewis, although he was an Anglican, In many respects, he was a very Catholic-friendly kind of Anglican. I just mentioned the abolition of man, and the abolition of man is very strongly based philosophically in a view of the world which is entirely consistent with Catholic theology.
Uh-huh.
You know, St. Thomas Aquinas is one of the greatest exponents of natural law theology.
Absolutely.
And that's effectively what Lewis is presenting, although he doesn't use that terminology. But he had a high view of natural law and natural theology, which a lot of Protestants do not. But he did. That's one thing. In many respects, he was very Catholic-friendly in terms of his own personal piety. He fasted on Fridays. He had a high view of the Eucharist. He had a high view of the priesthood as an Anglican, but nonetheless.
Of course.
He went to confession regularly, which is a very unusual thing for an Anglican to do. He had serious doubts about the morality of contraception in a way which, again, is not typical of your average Anglican. He believed in purgatory, which, again,
wow,
is not at all a typical Anglican belief.
Right, that sort of appears in the Great Divorce, right?
Yes, the Great Divorce is, in some respects, a kind of purgatorial story. Yeah.
Right, I always wondered, because he being more of the Anglican side, I wondered to what extent that was purgatory or not.
Yeah, no, he eventually said quite plainly in his book on prayer, Letters to Malcolm, that he said, "I believe in purgatory."
Wow.
By which he meant, you know, the cleaning up process. That,
right.
He said the favorite image for him, by which he conceptualized purgatory in his own mind, was taken from the dentist's chair.
Right.
He said, mm-hmm, when the tooth of life is drawn and I'm coming round from the anesthetic, the divine dentist will say, "Rinse your mouth out with this, and this will be purgatory."
What an image.
Yeah.
Painful image.
Yeah. But, you know, those are some of the ways in which Lewis was very friendlily disposed to Catholicism. And in those respects where he differed from Catholicism, and he did have difficulties about the Pope and about doctrines pertaining to the Blessed Virgin Mary, But on those questions, he generally kept quiet. He didn't write about it. He didn't publicly object. And he would almost never talk about it, even in private correspondence, because he felt that it was like picking at a scab. If we can't find, if he could not find his way into the Catholic Church on those points, he was charitably going to avoid making them into a constant sore, you know,
right,
an issue between him and his Catholic friends. And he did have very close Catholic friends, principally Tolkien, but several of the other members of that group around Lewis and Tolkien, called the Inklings. Many of them were Catholics, actually. So he had warm personal relations with Catholics. Couldn't find his own way into the Catholic Church, but because of all these Catholic-friendly writings that he did put out, he has helped a lot of people get there themselves.
Incredible.
People have likened him to Moses, in the sense that Moses led the people to the Promised Land but didn't enter it himself.
Wow. Incredible.
And Lewis is a little bit like that in some respects.
Wonderful. Incredible. Well, very good. It's good to know all this, because also sometimes people talk about it and we don't know, so it's good to hear from you that these were his dispositions, and that's where he got, and that's what he wrote about.
Mm.
Very good. And so in the current episodes, previous episodes of the podcast, I have started to speak about the section of the Catechism about the moral life and virtues and, you know, faith, hope, and charity. And now we're going to talk about sin and so forth. What writings of Lewis do you think are more oriented toward encouraging a life of Christian virtue in the reader?
Well, the Four Loves, probably, which we've already mentioned, because it's such an insightful analysis of how love can go bad, and mm-hmm, what is needed to keep love fresh and clean. That's a very helpful book. And interestingly, it goes well with one of Lewis's fictional works, his novel Till We Have Faces, which was his last novel. And it's a retelling of an ancient myth, the myth of Cupid and Psyche. And the ideas that Lewis explores philosophically and analytically in The Four Loves, he presents dramatically and narratively in the novel.
Mm-hmm.
If you find yourself responding better to fiction than nonfiction, I would encourage the reader, the listener, to try Till We Have Faces, a fantastic novel.
So what would be a brief summary of the book? Brief.
Oh dear, it is a difficult novel to summarize, but basically it's about...
Just to encourage people to read it, so that, I would like to know what that is about.
It's about a barbarian queen in a pre-Christian kingdom, and she has this fantastically beautiful sister called Psyche. And Psyche dies, I won't explain why and how, and Aurel is eaten up with bitterness and resentment that she's lost the love of her life, her beautiful sister. And she rails against the gods for taking away from her the one thing she loved, or so she thinks.
Right.
But actually her love had become terribly possessive.
Of course.
It had become distorted and controlling, and she hadn't realized it. So the novel explores that and does so very ingeniously and sympathetically and challengingly.
Okay, very good. Very good. Wonderful. Well, it's a good introduction to the book. It makes me remember in A Great Divorce. I think it's the mother,
yes,
with her son who loves him so much, he doesn't want him to go anywhere.
Exactly. Well spotted.
Right.
Because that example from The Great Divorce comes about a decade before he wrote Till We Have Faces. And so that mother in The Great Divorce is a kind of dry run. She's a prototype for this barbarian queen.
Wow.
He gives a whole novel to her in Till We Have Faces, whereas in The Great Divorce, she's just one amongst, 10 or so characters.
Wow. Wonderful. Very good. Well, anything else that you would like to tell us about, tell us about Lewis or his books, or about your books that you would like to wrap all these two episodes with?
Okay, well, two things. You mentioned that I've written this book, Planet Narnia, which is about the seven heavens and the place that they hold in his imagination. And that leads me to think of Dante, because Dante in the Divine Comedy has the pilgrim mounting up through the seven heavens in the ascent to God's throne. And Lewis loved Dante, described the Paradiso as the highest point that poetry had ever reached. So a lot of Lewis's own immersion in that symbolic world of the seven heavens derives from Dante, which again shows you Lewis's openness to Catholic art and Catholic literature. That's one thing. And secondly, Lewis had a long correspondence with a Catholic priest called Don Giovanni Calabria, who is
Italian
and has now become a blessed and I think even canonized.
Wow, no way.
Certainly beatified. And Don Giovanni Calabria had quite a ministry of ecumenism. He wrote to a lot of non-Catholics in a spirit of charity and outreach.
Wonderful.
Engendering wholesome and Irenic exchanges. And Lewis wrote many, many letters back to him, and the whole correspondence is in Latin.
Wow, that's incredible.
You can fortunately get an English translation of it if you don't have good enough Latin. But I mention it because it's a great example of Lewis's charity. As I said, he couldn't, for various reasons, find his way into the Catholic Church. But he was extremely charitable in discussing matters with Catholics. And I've learned a lot from his attitude, because it's slightly unusual with C.S. Lewis. He was a great debater. He had a great skill in public debate. He was the president of the Oxford Socratic Club, which was a forum for debate between Christians and non-Christians. And he was one of the best debaters that you could imagine. And he loved talking for victory, as it was sometimes called, in the manner of Dr. Samuel Johnson. And, you know, if he couldn't shoot you with his pistol, he'd knock you down with the butt end of the gun because he didn't like to lose. That was in his public debate when he was in philosophical mode, mm-hmm. Apologetic mode. But when it came to personal relations, he adopted a very different spirit, this attitude of charity and patience and long-suffering. And sometimes the best thing to say is nothing. Least said, soonest mended. And I think this arose in part because Lewis was raised in Ireland, in the north of Ireland, in Belfast. That was where he was born and brought up. Mm. And Belfast, of course, is a very sectarian, or was back then, and still is now, regrettably, a very sectarian and divided community between the Protestants and the Catholics, between the Loyalists and the Unionists. And I think Lewis had seen in his own upbringing how theological questions and ecclesiological questions got entangled with political and social and cultural questions, and how much of the time Christians allowed themselves to be divided one from another for totally irrelevant reasons.
Right.
And I think that's the spirit that he brought into his ecumenism and these correspondences. And a very impressive charity and gentleness.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah, something to learn beyond his... It's one of those things where you see how great writers are greater when they're humble and charitable.
Yeah,
right? They're much greater and much more relatable and much more helpful to society, in a sense.
Absolutely.
So wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Father Ward, for spending your time with us, for making the sacrifice of being here in our, for coming all the way to England to be in this podcast. No, I know you came for other reasons, but for taking this time, this period of time of your schedule to be with us. And thank you, everyone, for spending your time with us. And make sure you pray for Father Ward, that he may continue with his ministry and his intellectual ministry also to readers and so forth. Please share this episode with your friends, and if you can, leave a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. May God bless you, everyone, and we will see you next time.